Catelyn. They carried the corpses in upon their shoulders and laid them beneath the dais. A silence fell across the torch-lit hall, and in the quiet Catelyn could hear grey wind howling half a castle away. "He smells the blood," she thought. Through stone walls and wooden doors, through night and rain, he still knows the scent of death and ruin. She stood at Rob's left hand beside the high seat, and for a moment felt almost as if she were looking down at her own dead, at Bran and Rickon. These boys had been much older, but death had shrunken them. Naked and wet, they seemed such little things, so still it was hard to remember them living. The blond boy had been trying to grow a beard. Pale yellow peach fuzz covered his cheeks and jaw above the red ruin the knife had made of his throat. His long golden hair was still wet, as if he had been pulled from a bath. By the look of him, he had died peacefully, perhaps in sleep. But his brown-haired cousin had fought for life. His arms bore slashes where he'd tried to block the blades, and red still trickled slowly from the stab wounds that covered his chest and belly and back, like so many tongueless mouths, though the rain had washed him almost clean. Rob had donned his crown before coming to the hall, and the bronze shone darkly in the torchlight. Shadows hid his eyes as he looked upon the dead. Does he see Bran and Rickon as well? She might have wept, but there were no tears left in her. The dead boys were pale from long imprisonment, and both had been fair. Against their smooth white skin, the blood was shockingly red, unbearable to look upon. Will they lay Sansa down naked beneath the Iron Throne after they've killed her? Will her skin seem as white, her blood as red? From outside came the steady wash of rain and the restless howling of a wolf. Her brother Edmure stood to Rob's right, one hand upon the back of his father's seat, his face still puffy from sleep. They had woken him, as they had her, pounding on his door in the black of night to yank him rudely from his dreams. Were they good dreams, brother? Do you dream of sunlight and laughter and a maiden's kisses? I pray you do. Her own dreams were dark and laced with terrors. Rob's captains and lords' bannermen stood about the hall, some mailed and armed, others in various states of dishevelment and undress. Sir Reynold and his uncle Sir Rolf were among them, but Rob had seen fit to spare his queen this ugliness. "The crag is not far from Castle Rock," Catelyn recalled. "Jane may well have played with these boys when all of them were children." She looked down again upon the corpses of the squires, Tion Frey and Willem Lannister, and waited for her son to speak. It seemed a very long time before Rob lifted his eyes from the bloody dead. "Small John," he said, "tell your father to bring them in." Wordless, Small John Umber turned to obey, his steps echoing in the great stone hall. As the great John marched his prisoners through the doors, Catelyn made note of how some other men stepped back to give them room, as if treason could somehow be passed by a touch, a glance, a cough. The captors and the captives looked very much alike, big men every one, with thick beards and long hair. Two of the great John's men were wounded, and three of their prisoners. Only the fact that some had spears and others empty scabbards served to set them apart. All were clad in mail hauberks or shirts of sewn rings, with heavy boots and thick cloaks, some of wool and some of fur. "The North is hard and cold and has no mercy," Ned had told her when she first came to Winterfell 1,000 years ago. "Five," said Rob when the prisoner stood before him, wet and silent. "Is that all of them?"
"There were eight," rumbled the great John. "We killed two taking them, and a third is dying now."
Rob studied the faces of the captives. "It required eight of you to kill two unarmed squires? Edmure Tully spoke up.
They murdered two of my men as well to get into the tower, Delp and Elwood.
It was no murder, sir,
said Lord Rickard Carstock, no more discomforted by the ropes about his wrist than by the blood that trickled down his face.
Any man who steps between a father and his vengeance asks for death.
His words rang against Catelyn's ears, harsh and cruel as the pounding of a war drum. Her throat was dry as bone. I did this. These two boys died, so my daughters might live. I saw your sons die that night in the Whispering Wood, Rob told Lord Carstark. Teon Frey did not kill Torrin. Willem Lannister did not slay Eddard. How then can you call this vengeance? This was folly and bloody murder. Your sons died honourably on a battlefield with swords in their hands.
They died, said Rickard Carstark, yielding no inch of ground. The Kingslayer cut them down. These two were of his ilk. Only blood can pay for blood.
The blood of children?
Rob pointed at the corpses. How old were they?
12, 13?
Squires.
Squires die in every battle.
Die fighting, yes.
Teon Frey and Willem Lannister gave up their swords in the Whispering Wood. They were captives, locked in a cell, asleep, unarmed. Boys! Look at them!
Lord Carstark looked instead at Catelyn.
Tell your mother to look at them, he said. She slew them as much as I.
Catelyn put a hand on the back of Rob's seat. The hall seemed to spin about her. She felt as if she might retch.
My mother had naught to do with this, Rob said angrily. This was your work, your murder, your treason. How can it be treason to kill Lannisters when it is not treason to free them?
Asked Carstark harshly.
Has your grace forgotten that we are at war with Castle Rock? In war, you kill your enemies. Didn't your father teach you that, boy?
Boy!
The Great John dealt Richard Carstark a buffet with a mail fist that sent the other lord to his knees.
Leave him!
Rob's voice rang with command. Umber stepped back away from the captive. Lord Carstark spit out a broken tooth.
Yes, Lord Umber, leave me to the king. He means to give me a scolding before he forgives me. That's how he deals with treason, our king in the north.
He smiled a wet red smile.
Or should I call you the king who lost the north, your grace?
The Great John snatched a spear from the man beside him and jerked it to his shoulder.
Let me spit him, sire. Let me open his belly so we can see the colour of his guts.
The doors of the hall crashed open, and the Blackfish entered with water running from his cloak and helm. Tully, men-at-arms, followed him in, whilst outside lightning cracked across the sky and a hard black rain pounded against the stones of Riverrun. Sir Brynden removed his helm and went to one knee.
Your grace, was all he said, but the grimness of his tone spoke volumes.
I will hear Sir Brynden privily in the audience chamber. Rob rose to his feet.
Great John, keep Lord Carstark here till I return, and hang the other seven.
The Great John lowered his spear.
Even the dead ones?
Yes, I will not have such fouling my lord uncle's rivers. Let them feed the crows.
One of the captives dropped to his knees.
Mercy, sire, I killed no one. I only stood at the door to watch for guards.
Rob considered that for a moment. Did you know what Lord Rickard intended? Did you see the knives drawn? Did you hear the shouts, the screams, the cries for mercy?
I did, but I took no part. I was only the watcher, I swear it.
Lord Umber, said Rob, this one was only the watcher. Hang him last, so he may watch the others die. Mother, uncle, with me, if you please.
He turned away as the Great John's men closed upon the prisoners and drove them from the hall at spear point. Outside, the thunder crashed and boomed, so loud it sounded as if the castle were coming down about their ears. Is this the sound of a kingdom falling? Catelyn wondered.
It was dark within the audience chamber, but at least the sound of the thunder was muffled by another thickness of wall. A servant entered with an oil lamp to light the fire, but Rob sent him away and kept the lamp. There were tables and chairs, but only Edmure sat, and he rose again when he realized that the others had remained standing. Rob took off his crown and placed it on the table before him. The blackfish shut the door. "The Karstarks are gone."
"All?"
Was it anger or despair that thickened Rob's voice like that? Even Catelyn was not certain. "All the fighting men," Sir Brynden replied. "A few camp followers and serving men were left with their wounded. We questioned as many as we needed to be certain of the truth. They started leaving at nightfall, stealing off in ones and twos at first, and then in larger groups. The wounded men and servants were told to keep the campfires lit so no one would know they'd gone, but once the rains began, it didn't matter."
"Will they reform, away from River Run?" asked Rob.
"No, they've scattered, hunting. Lord Karstark has sworn to give the hand of his maiden daughter to any man high-born or low who brings him the head of the Kingslayer."
"Gods be good."
Catelyn felt ill again. "Near 300 riders and twice as many mounts melted away in the night." Rob rubbed his temples, where the crown had left its mark, in the soft skin above his ears. "All the mounted strength of Carhold lost."
"Lost by me. By me, may the gods forgive me."
Catelyn did not need to be a soldier to grasp the trap Rob was in. For the moment he held the Riverlands, but his kingdom was surrounded by enemies to every side but east, where Lysa sat, aloof on her mountaintop. Even the Trident was scarce secure, so long as the Lord of the Crossing withheld his allegiance. And now, to lose the Karstarks as well. "No word of this must leave River Run," her brother Edmure said. "Lord Tywin would, the Lannisters pay their debts. They are always saying that. Mother have mercy when he hears."
"Sansa."
Catelyn's nails dug into the soft flesh of her palms. So hard did she close her hand. Rob gave Edmure a look that chilled.
"Would you make me a liar as well as a murderer, uncle?"
"We need speak no falsehood. Only say nothing. Bury the boys and hold our tongues till the war's done. Willem was son to Sir Kevin Lannister and Lord Tywin's nephew. Tien was Lady Jenna's and a Frey. We must keep the news from the twins as well until
we can bring the murdered dead back to life," said Brynden Blackfish sharply.
"The truth escaped with the Karstarks, Edmure. It's too late for such games."
"I owe their fathers truth," said Rob, "and justice. I owe them that as well." He gazed at his crown, the dark gleam of bronze, the circle of iron swords. "Lord Rickard defied me, betrayed me. I have no choice but to condemn him. Gods know what the Karstark foot will do with Roose Bolton when they hear I've executed their liege for a traitor. Bolton must be warned."
"Lord Karstark's heir was at Harrenhal as well," Sir Brynden reminded him. "The elder son, the one the Lannisters took captive on the Green Fork."
"Harrion." "His name is Harrion," Rob laughed bitterly. "A king had best know the names of his enemies, don't you think?" The Blackfish looked at him shrewdly.
"You know that for a certainty, that this will make young Karstark your enemy?"
"What else would he be? I'm about to kill his father. He's not like to thank me."
"He might. There are sons who hate their fathers, and in a stroke you will make him Lord of Carhold."
Rob shook his head.
"Even if Harrion were that sort, he could never openly forgive his father's killer. His own men would turn on him. These are Northmen, uncle. The North remembers."
"Pardon him, then," urged Edmure Tully. Rob stared at him in frank disbelief. Under that gaze, Edmure's face reddened.
"Spare his life, I mean. I don't like the taste of it any more than you, sire.
He slew my men as well. Poor Delp had only just recovered from the wound Sir Jamie gave him. caster must be punished, certainly. Keep him in chains, I say.
A hostage? Said Cadlin. It might be best.
Yes, a hostage.
Her brother seized on her musing as agreement. Tell the son that so long as he remains loyal, his father will not be harmed.
Otherwise, we have no hope of the Freys now. Not if I offer to marry all Lord Walder's daughters and carry his litter besides. If we should lose the Carstocks as well, what hope is there?
What hope? Rob let out a breath, pushed his hair back from his eyes and said, We've had naught from Sir Roderick in the north. No response from Walder Frey to our new offer. Only silence from the Eyrie. He appealed to his mother. Will your sister never answer us? How many times must I write her? I will not believe that none of the birds have reached her. Her son wanted comfort, Catelyn realized. He wanted to hear that it would be all right. But her king needed truth. The birds have reached her, though she may tell you they did not, if it ever comes to that. Expect no help from that quarter, Rob. Lysa was never brave. When we were girls together, she would run and hide whenever she'd done something wrong. Perhaps she thought our Lord Father would forget to be wroth with her if he could not find her. It is no different now. She ran from King's Landing for fear to the safest place she knows, and she sits on her mountain hoping everyone will forget her. The Knights of the Vale could make all the difference in this war, said Rob. But if she will not fight, so be it. I've asked only that she open the Bloody Gate for us and provide ships at Gulltown to take us north. The high road would be hard, but not so hard as fighting our way up the neck. If I could land at White Harbour, I could flank Moat Cailin and drive the Iron Men from the north in half a year.
It will not happen, sire, said the Blackfish. Cat is right. Lady Lysa is too fearful to admit an army to the Vale, any army. The Bloody Gate will remain closed.
The others can take her, then, Rob cursed in a fury of despair. Bloody Rickard Carstark as well, and Theon Greyjoy, Walder Frey, Tywin Lannister, and all the rest of them. Gods be good, why would any man ever want to be a king? When everyone was shouting, King in the North, King in the North, I told myself, swore to myself, that I would be a good king, as honourable as father, strong, just, loyal to my friends, and brave when I face my enemies. Now I can't even tell one from the other. How did it all get so confused? Lord Rickard's fought at my side in half a dozen battles. His sons died for me in the Whispering Wood. Theon Frey and Willem Lannister were my enemies, yet now I have to kill my dead friend's father for their sakes. He looked at them all. Will the Lannisters thank me for Lord Rickard's head? Will the Freys?
No,
said Brynden Blackfish, blunt as ever. All the more reason to spare Lord Rickard's life and keep him hostage, Edmure urged. Rob reached down with both hands, lifted the heavy bronze and iron crown, and set it back atop his head. And suddenly, he was a king again. Lord Rickard dies.
But why? Said Edmure. You said yourself.
I know what I said, uncle. It does not change what I must do. The swords in his crown stood stark and black against his brow. In battle, I might have slain Tion and Willem myself, but this was no battle. They were asleep in their beds, naked and unarmed, in a cell where I put them. Rickard Carstark killed more than a Frey and a Lannister. He killed my honour. I shall deal with him at dawn. When day broke, grey and chilly, the storm had diminished to a steady, soaking rain, yet even so the God's Wood was crowded. River lords and northmen, high-born and low, knights and sellswords and stable-boys, they stood amongst the trees to see the end of the night's dark dance. Edmure had given commands, and a headsman's block had been set up before the heart tree. Rain and leaves fell all around them, as the Great John's men led Lord Rickard Carstark through the press, hands still bound.
His men already hung from River Run's high walls, slumping at the end of long ropes, as the rain washed down their darkening faces. Long Lu waited beside the block, but Rob took the poleaxe from his hand and ordered him to step aside. "This is my work," he said. "He dies at my word. He must die by my hand." Lord Rickard Carstark dipped his head stiffly. "For that much, I thank you, but for naught else." He had dressed for death in a long black wool surcoat emblazoned with the white sunburst of his house. "The blood of the first men flows in my veins as much as yours, boy. You would do well to remember that I was named for your grandfather. I raised my banners against King Ares for your father and against King Joffrey for you. At Oxcross and the Whispering Wood and in the Battle of the Camps, I rode beside you, and I stood with Lord Eddard on the Trident. We are kin, Stark and Carstark." "This kinship did not stop you from betraying me," Rob said, "and it will not save you now. Kneel, my lord." Lord Rickard had spoken truly, Catelyn knew. The Carstarks traced their descent to Carlan Stark, a younger son of Winterfell who had put down a rebel lord 1,000 years ago and had been granted lands for his valour. The castle he built had been named Carl's Hold, but that soon became Carhold, and over the centuries the Carhold Starks had become Carstarks. "Old guards or new, it makes no matter," Lord Rickard told her son. "No man is so accursed as the Kinslayer." "Kneel, traitor," Rob said again, "or must have them force your head onto the block." Lord Carstark knelt. "The gods shall judge you, as you have judged me." He laid his head upon the block. "Rickard Carstark, Lord of Carhold." Rob lifted the heavy axe with both hands. "Here in the sight of gods and men, I judge you guilty of murder and high treason. In mine own name I condemn you. With mine own hand I take your life. Would you speak a final word?" "Kill me, and be cursed. You are no king of mine." The axe crashed down. Heavy and well honed, it killed at a single blow. But it took 3 to sever the man's head from his body, and by the time it was done, both living and dead were drenched in blood. Rob flung the poleaxe down in disgust and turned wordless to the heart tree. He stood shaking, with his hands half clenched and the rain running down his cheeks. "Gods forgive him," Catelyn prayed in silence. "He's only a boy, and he had no other choice." That was the last she saw of her son that day. The rain continued all through the morning, lashing the surface of the rivers and turning the godswood grass into mud and puddles. The Blackfish assembled 100 men and rode out after Carstarks, but no one expected he would bring back many. "I only pray I do not need to hang them," he said as he departed. When he was gone, Catelyn retreated to her father Solar to sit once more beside Lord Huster's bed. "It will not be much longer," Maester Vyman warned her when he came that afternoon. "His last strength is going, though still he tries to fight." "He was ever a fighter," she said. "A sweet, stubborn man." "Yes," the maester said, "but this battle he cannot win. It is time he lay down his sword and shield. Time to yield." To yield, she thought, to make a peace. Was it her father the maester was speaking of, or her son? At evenfall, Jane Westling came to see her. The young queen entered the Solar timidly. "Lady Catelyn, I do not mean to disturb you." "You are most welcome here, your grace." Catelyn had been sewing, but she put the needle aside now. "Please, call me Jane. I don't feel like a grace." "You are one, nonetheless. Please, come sit, your grace." "Jane." She sat by the hearth and smoothed her skirt out anxiously. "As you wish. How might I serve you, Jane?" "It's Rob," the girl said. "He's so miserable, so angry and disconsolate. I don't know what to do. It is a hard thing to take a man's life. I know. I told him he should use a headsman. When Lord Tywin sends a man to die, all he does is give the command. It's easier that way, don't you think?
Yes, said Catelyn. But my lord husband taught his sons that killing should never be easy.
Oh, Queen Jane wet her lips. Rob has not eaten all day. I had Roland bring him a nice supper, boar's ribs and stewed onions and ale, but he never touched a bite of it. He spent all morning writing a letter and told me not to disturb him. But when the letter was done, he burned it. Now he's sitting and looking at maps. I asked him what he was looking for, but he never answered. I don't think he even heard me. He wouldn't even change out of his clothes. They were damp all day and bloody. I want to be a good wife to him, I do, but I don't know how to help, to cheer him or comfort him. I don't know what he needs. Please, my lady, you're his mother. Tell me what I should do.
Tell me what I should do. Catelyn might have asked the same, if her father had been well enough to ask. But Lord Hoster was gone, or near enough. Her Ned as well.
Bran, and Rickon too, and Mother, and Brandon so long ago.
Only Rob remained to her, Rob and the fading hope of her daughters.
Sometimes, Catelyn said slowly, the best thing you can do is nothing. When I first came to Winterfell, I was hurt whenever Ned went to the Godswood to sit beneath his heart tree. Part of his soul was in that tree, I knew, a part I would never share. Yet without that part, I soon realized he would not have been Ned. Jane, child, you have wed the North as I did, and in the North, the winters will come. She tried to smile. Be patient. Be understanding. He loves you, and he needs you, and he will come back to you soon enough. This very night, perhaps. Be there when he does. That's all I can tell you.
The young queen listened raptly. I will, she said when Catelyn was done. I'll be there. She got to her feet. I should go back. He might have missed me. I'll see. But if he's still at his maps, I'll be patient.
Do, said Catelyn. But when the girl was at the door, she thought of something else. Jane, she called after, there's one more thing Rob needs from you, though he may not know it yet himself. A king must have an heir. The girl smiled at that. My mother says the same. She makes a posset for me, herbs and milk and ale, to help make me fertile. I drink it every morning. I tell Rob I'm sure to give him twins, an Eddard and a Brandon. He liked that, I think. We try most every day, my lady. Sometimes twice or more. The girl blushed very prettily. I'll be with child soon, I promise. I pray to our mother above every night.
Very good. I will add my prayers as well, to the old gods and the new. When the girl had gone, Catelyn turned back to her father and smoothed the thin white hair across his brow.
An Eddard and a Brandon, she sighed softly, and perhaps in time a Hoster. Would you like that?
He did not answer, but she had never expected that he would. As the sound of the rain on the roof mingled with her father's breathing, she thought about Jane. The girl did seem to have a good heart, just as Rob had said, and good hips, which might be more important.